Welcome to Vegas Circle Podcast with your hosts, Pocky and Chris. We are people who are passionate about business, success, and culture. And this is our platform to showcase the people in our city who made it happen. On today's podcast, we're going to be discussing what it takes to be a successful entrepreneur, strategic thinker, and networker with businessman Jay Bloom and also his son, business investor Sean Bloom. So welcome to the circle, fellas.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Finally make this happen, man.
Thanks for reaching out. I'm glad we
had to, man. So you guys have been just kind of starting off, jumping right in. You guys probably been on 50 plus interviews in the last probably 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So of course we got to ask you the traditional question before we get into the business questions.
Let's do it.
The submarine.
Yes.
So you guys were supposed to be on the Titan submarine that actually imploded, which is unreal, you know, situation.
Yeah.
Very sad to hear.
But can you guys share that, you know, at least for our listeners and the folks in Las Vegas, what made you guys not, you know, want to be on the submarine? And, well, kind of give that whole breakdown.
So Stockton Rush originally approached me about a year ago.
Okay. Yep.
And, you know, conceptually, it sounded pretty cool, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and when my son grew up, he was a big fan of the Titanic story.
Yeah.
So I thought this would be an opportunity to do something really unique and a one-of-a-kind experience for him. So I told Stockton I was interested. And we talked about it conceptually until about February of this year.
Okay.
And in February, he started to want to set dates. So Sean spoke with his friend, and they started to raise some concerns about the sub, and he did a little research and some digging. And he came back with concerns about he found a video of Stockton showing how he controlled the sub with a consumer-grade Logitech video controller. And that raised some flags for Sean.
Yeah.
And then from there, he started to look into the carbon fiber hull because nobody else was doing it. And a lot of people warned Stockton off of doing it, actually telling him it was a bad idea. Wow. So Sean brought that to me as well. I told Stockton we had some concerns. And he flew out to Vegas to meet me. We went to the Luxor, to the Titanic exhibition.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And we walked through that and talked. And then we went to the food court for lunch. And he was explaining to me what the expedition would be like, and then we got into the safety concerns, and he was very dismissive about it. And he told me when he flew into North Las Vegas Airport, which I thought was a strange choice.
You said North Las Vegas Airport.
Las Vegas Airport.
Okay. Usually like Henderson or maybe Harry Reid or
Harry Reid or Henderson Executive.
I always forget we have an airport.
Same.
Yeah,
because no one goes there. It's not a normal airport to go to.
I don't think there's an FBO there. That's, you know. So he said, I asked him what kind of plane he flew in. He said, oh, I have a 2-seater experimental that I built. I'm like, okay, now I'm a pilot. I've had my helicopter pilot's license for 25 years. I don't think I would get into an experimental aircraft. So I'm thinking about it. And here I have a guy who flew in on a home-built aircraft that I would never get on to pitch me on going on a home-built submarine to the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Yeah.
That just sounds crazy.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It was crazy.
So in April, he started to pitch me on dates in May, and then the May dates slid to June 18th, which was the date of this expedition. And I didn't want to get into an argument with him about the safety because he was not about to hear anything that he didn't agree with. So I told him I had scheduling conflicts and we'd revisit it next summer. And the rest, I guess, is history.
Wow. Crazy that he had that insight to be able to look into it a little bit deeper. Because, you know, I'm an avid gamer, so me seeing the remote too, I was like, that's a red flag.
That's exactly what I said. I found that video before it went viral, like before the news media outlets started posting all about it and stuff. Like, I knew right away when I saw him with the Logitech controller, I was like, bro. And then it was like 2 or 3 touchscreens. And when I told him to ask Stockton about it, Stockton said that me and my other friend who came up with this, you know, conclusion that we probably shouldn't go, Stockton called us misinformed. And we're like, all right, well, then we're not going.
This is baby. When he's so focused on, like you say, you want to get into an argument, he's focused that this is going
to
happen.
I tried to get into a mini argument. It didn't work. He just came back and said that we're misinformed and the submarine's good to over 10,000 feet, no problem.
Well, so I watched it for about a week as the sub was missing. And then on Thursday, they said the sub was lost and everybody on board had passed away, was lost. So I posted on Facebook, just for my circle of friends, my 3 or 4 screenshots of my conversations with Stockton about how he's telling me how safe it is. Oh, wow. And he offered me $100,000 a ticket discount.
Yeah, that was a concerning solution because that didn't answer our question.
Yeah, I was like, the price point is not the issue here.
Yeah.
If I think I'm going to die, lowering it from 250 to 150 is not going to make a difference. you're missing the issue. So on Thursday night, I put this post up with these screenshots of my conversation, my text messages. And I said, tomorrow's never promised and, make today count. And I hit post and I went to bed. And Friday morning, my phone, both of our phones are like vibrating off the table. And it's Chris Cuomo, CNN.
It's so funny because we were literally watching a show together. Like I was up. I was working on something. I was up till like 7 in the morning. So like when I was about to go to sleep at 7 a.m., he was just getting up. So he asked me if I was up and I'm like, yeah, I'm about to go to sleep. And he was just waking up. It was like 7 a.m. And we're like, oh, let's watch this show. We've been watching this show. We were binge watching a show. And he came over and we're watching the show and we're just chilling. And yeah, our phone just started going crazy. We're like, what? Because we try not to like look at our phones. We're watching the show because it's like a really addicting show. we're like, what is going on? So then we looked at it and we're like, what? And then these phone calls, CNN, Chris Cuomo, NBC, ABC News, New York Times.
New York Post. People Magazine.
People Magazine did four stories on this.
Wow.
Called me a hero.
You said called you a hero. Yeah. Our heart goes out to all the people that passed away. And the last thing I'll say on there is the father and the son were actually similar to you guys' age, right?
The son was less than a year difference from Sean's age, and the father was about my age.
Yeah.
And, when I saw it on the news, I'd see like three pictures of individuals. It was PH and Stockton and the person from the UK.
Mm.
And then the fourth picture was this father and son. And I'm like, but for one bad decision, that would be our picture on there. And it'd be my family. It'd be our family talking to the media about us.
That was Father's Day too, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's why they went.
Oh, that's right.
The kid didn't want to go.
Wow.
The kid had the same concerns I did.
Wow.
But my dad listened and his dad didn't.
Well, I think, and here, this may be your transition. I think Sean was a Titanic fan. With them, the dad was the Titanic fan.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And it's the same mistake that Stockton made. When you become emotional and emotionally invested in something, you lose objectivity and you start making bad decisions.
Got it.
Yeah. And I think that's what Stockton did. And I think that's what the father did when his son raised his concerns.
The difference was I was the Titanic fan and I still didn't want to go because of all the fucking problems.
Yeah, that's wild, man. So you've obviously been very successful, especially in Vegas and throughout the country.
And I've had my good days and my bad days.
You've done some amazing things. So what we want to kind of first start off with is just kind of briefly discussing like your business background and some of the business ventures. Did I read correctly? So your first kind of start in entrepreneurship was you created a PPO network for companion animals. Is that what my understanding was?
Correct. I spent 10 years with JP Morgan Chase and I was an executive in Fast Track.
Okay.
And then my wife and I had a golden retriever that had hip dysplasia. And it was like $3,000 surgery. And this was the late 90s.
Okay.
Right. And I said, and there was no products available. And I said, well, what if I establish a network where I negotiate contracted pricing and then charge for access to the network?
Okay.
And it was the only product out there. And there's like, enormous amount of pets and like half the households in the country.
For sure. Yeah.
So we did that and I wound up selling. I had to find a way to a distribution channel for these memberships. Huh. And I built the network up to 2,200 veterinarians around the country.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And sold membership access to the network through employee payroll deduction benefit programs.
Got it.
Okay. So I went to Fortune 500 companies and I said, hey, look, you can offer this to your employees. They would take 50,000 employees, $10 a month each that sign up for it and, send me a check.
It's a win. Yeah, that's a huge.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty big insight to jump into that. Like, did you have experience with kind of navigating those dynamics before? Or you just knew it was kind of just like a standard business culture type of decision that you made to kind of continue to push it in that direction?
Well, we started building the network first and we were looking at just, retail sales word of mouth.
Mm.
It wasn't growing fast enough and I wanted to grow the network faster and expand faster. So we started looking at other distribution channels and we did a deal with Petco to sell it through Petco. And we did a deal with, a bunch of Fortune 500 companies to sell it as an employee benefit. Yeah, that worked a lot better than trying to sell it one at a time on our website.
That's awesome. Yeah. Especially having that insight. So you've kind of had many hats, and I know we're getting also what Sean's been able to do, but you've been involved, obviously building the Mob Museum back in the day in Vegas. But we do have to ask you just a brief question about the NBA, right? So we know it's recently came out that, you know, Seattle and Vegas are on the cards for the two, you know, expansion teams that are in Vegas. Can you kind of touch on just your perspective and your thoughts on Vegas as far as being, you know, additional professional team that's coming here, but also your thoughts on possibly being, you know, part of that, you know, capital group that would actually buy in and be able to bid on a team here?
Yeah. I mean, I'm somewhat limited in what I can speak to, I am part of one group that is bidding on the team or looking at bidding on the team. It's not open yet for offers.
Okay.
I think our group is one that, whether it's our group or somebody else, I believe the NBA is coming to Vegas in the next year or two.
Yeah.
And I think a team here would do very well. And the NBA ownership would do very well with a team here.
Are you both naturally sports fans? Is that what's kind of driving the interest? Or is it more strictly like a business decision at this point? Or is this one where you say, maybe you do have that emotional
It was more of a trophy asset to us in the beginning. Gotcha. And it was a fun way to, like, we met a lot of people doing this.
Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah.
No, like a lot. It was incredible. Like, but initially it was business decision mixture of, you know, we're not particularly sports fans. Like, we don't like watch the NBA. Like
the value is going up exponentially over the last couple of years.
It's mostly a business
decision. And you know, they're renegotiating their broadcast contract. I think that's what they're waiting for.
Yeah.
And when the broadcast contract is renegotiated, we'll see what the economics look like, because it still has to make sense from an economic perspective.
Yeah, you see what Michael Jordan just did. That was wild.
Being able to sell his team for an unbelievable amount. Yeah.
I know. It's you know, I looked at another team before they were looking at expansions.
Okay.
And, you know, I negotiated to buy it for $1.65 billion, and I was looking to move it to Vegas.
Okay.
Right. And, he paid $160 million for it, so it's a 10x return. And
the owner was not down for the Vegas move, though.
Was
no,
not?
He wanted to stay where
he wanted to stay where it was. That's why we ended up not doing the deal.
Oh, got it. That's interesting. It's interesting. A lot of politics behind that.
Well, so much behind it. Yeah. So much.
Yeah.
I can imagine, yeah.
But $1.65 billion, we would have overpaid anyway, to be honest. And it was selling for less. It sold for less.
Yeah.
It would have overpaid.
It sold for less because there was a bid behind us, and we were the high bid. That's why he took our offer.
Got it.
But it's in the past.
Yeah.
The reason I didn't do that was because if my intent was to buy the team and move it here, and the NBA says we're going to do an expansion franchise in Vegas, well, then I'm not going to be able to buy a team and move it here anymore.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
If I bought that team and moved it here, it'd be a $200 million relocation fee.
Yeah.
They were looking initially for $2.5 billion for an expansion franchise fee.
Wow.
So they're not going to forego that for my $300 million to move it to.
Not at all. Yeah. What do you guys see? Like, I mean, Vegas is absolutely awesome what's happening here, right? I mean, we've got the Knights, obviously, you know, congratulations to them. They just went in the
Stanley Cup. Yep.
I mean, Bill Foley did that brilliantly.
It's seven years, right?
I was part of the founding 50.
Oh, okay.
So,
Bill turned into the founding 75.
Founding 75.
Right?
Okay.
But Bill put together a group of people in the community to help acclimate the idea of a hockey team in the desert when nobody believed in it.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a conversation with Gary Bettman about, he asked me, do I think a team would work here? I told him that I moved here from New York. I had a very young son. And but when I was in New York, I had two or three teams in every professional sport. I had the Knicks, the Nets, the Giants, the Jets, the Islanders, Rangers, Devils, right? Yeah. I mean, I you know, and I moved to Vegas and I had the Area 51s and the Wranglers, right? But I didn't have any professional sports teams. Mm-hmm. And it was something really missing. And there's a lot of people in Vegas from New York and from California, where California had the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think there was the community was starved for a professional sports team. And I told Bettman I thought it would do very well. I said, I bet you he sells out the entire arena, like fast, like sets a record. And he did. He said, we're going to have a Stanley Cup within 6 years.
And he did the first year, didn't he?
They went to the Stanley Cup in the first year, lost to the Capitals.
I'm sorry, you're right.
So close.
They were so
close. They went there. That's what
we went there.
They went to game five of the finals for the Stanley Cup in their first year.
It's unreal.
Which never happens for an expansion team.
No, from no any sport. Ever.
They did so ever well. And you know, the timing of it too, it was right after the week after the 1 October shooting.
Oh, wow.
So everybody came in and that was like a healing moment. I think it was an emotion, the entire arena was just, you could feel the energy.
Yeah.
And that never left.
And that was a time in Vegas I think I'll never forget. The flags flying everywhere. There was so much morale. I think everybody rallied around that moment. And it was like so important for our city, I think.
I remember the first game, you know, again, this is a week after the 1 October shooting. So the two teams come out and they're facing each other. And then the other team, I think it was the Arizona Coyotes, they skated over to our side and stood with our team.
Oh, wow.
Instead of facing each other.
That's powerful.
Yeah. It was really, really something.
Yeah. I'm almost embarrassed to say this. I'm originally from Chicago, but I lived in the East Coast for a long time. Never went to a Bruins game. My first hockey game I go to is the Knights. And it was, you're right, it's rocking.
It's like, a great it's, arena. Yeah, they do such a good job there.
They did a great job with it.
I've gone to, you know, I'm the same way. I went to one Islanders-Rangers game 100 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And
100 years ago.
And, you know, so I really wasn't familiar with hockey that much, but I wanted a professional sports team here.
I'm with you 100%.
So I got involved and the first season, I'm like, this is great. So I went out to LA to go watch the LA team play there. And I got to tell you, it was half empty. People are reading, falling asleep. Mm-hmm. You go to a Knights game, the energy is just off the charts.
Yeah, they fall on show. Everybody got different people.
Bill Foley,
doing everything.
He was just absolutely genius in his marketing and his production. Mm-hmm. And he's built a world-class team. And he should have 2 Stanley Cups right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? For real.
Well, we got next year. Yeah.
We'll get see back to back. Yeah.
Yeah. We might see it again.
I'm looking forward to that.
Kind of flipping it a little bit to yourself, Sean. You're a great networker.
Yeah.
So that's what we kind of talked about, what you've been able to do to kind of build your brand and be able to meet a lot of different people. What do you believe kind of the qualities of someone that makes them a great networker?
The qualities of someone that makes them a great networker? Yeah. I wouldn't say it's exactly a hard thing or you need to have any type of quality to be a good networker. I think you just need to not be afraid to go out there and be confident and meet people. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what I did. I mean, I just went out there and I met people and I got extremely lucky with the people I met and I introduced the right people to each other and I ended up raising money for a bunch of projects and I got really, really good at it. And my Rolodex just kind of grew from there. I think it all it takes is confidence and not caring about what other people think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just go up to them. If they like you, they like you. If they don't, they don't, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's one of the underrated aspects of business that people lose sight of a lot. And I always tell Baki, him and I, to me, the most important thing in business is networking. I can't imagine anything else that's more important than that. Maybe luck would be another great one.
luck is,
Networking is something you could put conscious effort in building. And, you know, I think when you start learning that, though, learning that confidence, you know, how important is it to have that background of knowing how to put that deal together, knowing how to present that deal to people in a confident way? Like, did you put conscious efforts into that or just always came a little more naturally?
I never put, like, it depends on what it was I was doing at the time, but I didn't really. Sometimes I just like stumbled upon these situations where I would meet someone out somewhere and they'd be a billionaire or they'd be, you know, a celebrity or whatever it is. And I just started talking to them. It was a lot of my interactions were very random, but it's just all about being a chill person. Don't get starstruck, be confident, and just be cool with everyone, you know?
Kind of be you. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I just started introducing everyone to each other and then it kind of blew up, you know? Yeah.
Is it hard like asking people, like say you do have a great idea and a great deal you want to put together, like and you need X amount of dollars?
It's not hard at all. If I were raising capital for something or a friend needed help with a project or if I was doing something for him and he wanted to raise capital for something, I'd go out there and just, you know, you tell people about whatever it is you're doing and partner up with them, you know? You just hit them up and just be like, hey, I got a project going on here. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to hop on a call and talk about it, we can. If not, it's all good, you know? Most of the time they want to because usually it's something interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I was always looking for those opportunities. And I think when you have somebody like a producer that's facilitating the interaction, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it really does. It really does. But it's been a huge blessing being able to do what I do because I've met some of the like world's most interesting people doing it, you know? Yeah.
He really turned a corner at 14.
Yeah, 14 really? Is probably when I got started. Yeah. So, 14 is when
I'll spare Sean the details of it, but he got starstruck when I took him to meet somebody and he walked out and he said, that's never going to happen again.
Yeah.
And the following week, I, he was a professional wrestling fan.
Okay.
And the following week, I took him to meet Hulk Hogan, and he walks in and he goes, "What's up, brother man?"
Yeah. And that happened.
And
yeah.
From that point forward, he's been fearless.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
He's met Biden, Obama, mm-hmm. you know, and senators, congressmen, judges, mm-hmm. Governors, doesn't matter. He treats everybody like they're his best friend. And
that's awesome.
And yeah. and he doesn't pull any punches. He'll tell you exactly what he thinks, mm-hmm. which, yeah. you know, he's meeting with. I mean, I have a pretty good Rolodex. His Rolodex is better than mine.
Thank you.
Awesome. You know, like everybody we've had on the podcast.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. And
the Vegas Circle podcast is brought to you by RAC Financial. They help new and established businesses with simple, secure, and reliable payment processing. RAC's credit card merchant processing services are unmatched. Visit racfinancial.com today and mention Vegas Circle podcast.
And that was actually a question for me because I'm, you know, my wife and I, we have two kids, and I was curious just, you know, as far as business meetings, right? Like you're in a lot of different rooms. At what age did you start bringing or did you bring Sean to like different business meetings and things to learn?
No.
You didn't.
Sean okay. just kind of yeah. brought himself to my business meetings.
Smart.
Yeah. I mean, we were separate growing up because he was still building his businesses and he was building out his real estate fund. And I was, you know, going to school. Not really. I was going out partying and meeting people. Yeah, yeah. But
hey, you're building your networking skills.
Yeah, but yeah, basically. And then he saw what I was doing, and yeah. and you know, we found a perfect partnership with each other. We're like, okay, mm-hmm. let's just I'll raise all the money, and you do the executing.
Okay,
you know what I mean.
So that's kind of like your business deal, basically. Business
yeah, plan. And then I bring interesting people, interesting partners to a lot of the projects we do together, and mm-hmm. My best friend Simon too. Is my best friend. He's really good at it too. I met him around the time I got started, and we just networked together like monsters. And okay. it's been a huge blessing to be able to do all this.
Yeah.
Because I've met so many crazy, interesting people doing it.
Yeah.
And it's gotten insane now. Like it's really gotten crazy. Just a huge blessing for real.
What's for both of you guys, what's probably the biggest, objective or biggest roadblock that you've experienced that you've had to really get through or maybe didn't, you know, get through?
There've been a lot.
That's two separate questions. The biggest objective and the biggest roadblock are two different questions.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. There've been a million roadblocks. I mean, everything we do is big and we do it to the maximum. So obviously in that field, you hit a lot of roadblocks.
I've seen 1,000 business plans and I've never seen one go to plan. There will always be hurdles. There will always be roadblocks. Mm-hmm. There will always be unanticipated twists and turns.
Mm-hmm. Very unanticipated, like out of nowhere.
Your ability to succeed is directly proportional to your ability to navigate those roadblocks and find solutions.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Don't think your business plan is how it's actually going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never does. It never does. Yeah. Even with us, we could go and start a project right now and, you know, put a bunch of money into it, get it to a 9-figure valuation. And it's like, in the middle of all that, you're going to hit roadblocks. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what industry you're in, what the project is based around, mm-hmm. you're going to hit roadblocks.
Yeah.
That's why hard work is so important. You got to be willing to work around it. You got to know how to work around it, and you just can't give up on it.
Yeah.
If the project fails, ultimately, you know, it fails. It wasn't meant to be. You know, you could revive it, work on it, but you know when you get to a certain point when it's time to stop and move on, you know?
Yeah, that would be my follow-up question. Is, you know, you have like – most of the time we have small business owners on. And mm-hmm. I think that to your point, you do things at a scale. Like it's a different type of dynamic that you're kind of navigating through. Do you think like, you know, if you were going to give a recommendation to start small, because obviously you have experience to be able to navigate those bigger type of hurdles, but you know, realistically, that's a pretty hard field to be in.
You're always going to learn new lessons. One of the things I found is it's just as easy to do a big deal as it is a small deal.
And that's what gave me my follow-up. Yes. Yeah, so is it the same? Yeah.
It really is. Like, it's all the same thing. It's just the magnitude of what you're doing. I mean, if you could find a shortcut and somehow get yourself involved in a big deal or start a company and just run it up really quickly as your mm-hmm. first thing, then more power to you. I mean, if you want to start small, then don't be afraid to have crazy goals.
Yeah.
Like, don't be afraid to think mm-hmm. that this company is going to make a couple hundred mil or you're going to cash out at something crazy. Like, don't be afraid to don't limit yourself in what you're doing.
But don't make the Stockton Rush mistake and get so emotionally vested.
Don't make the Stockton Rush mistake. Don't go down to the bottom of the ocean in a submarine that can't withstand that pressure.
Listen to other people that are not as passionate. Yeah. Hear what they're saying. Don't just dismiss them because they don't agree with you. Because sometimes when you're emotionally vested, you're not seeing things really clearly.
Peer review is so important. Let your friends and business partners find
people that are objective, that will be honest with you, that will be critical of what you're overlooking because you're such a believer in your project, you're not seeing things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That passion you get because you believe in the project is so important. but it also can cloud your judgment.
And is when you're getting into a project, you have to feel that passion about it, or would you strictly go into something knowing it's just a good business decision?
I would only do things that I'm passionate about.
Oh, okay.
That's, I gotta enjoy it.
Yeah, it's gotta be fun if we're gonna do it. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't like it when it feels like work. Like, we naturally work hard at whatever it is we do, but it's always fun for us because, again, we're always meeting interesting people and navigating through the problems. Yeah. Even the problems are hilarious sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is really bad, but it's kind of funny.
You take a step back and look at it from a third party perspective.
And then you just say, we're going to fix it. It's all good.
It's much worse when you're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
If you were just a third person looking in, you go, really? It's not that bad.
Yeah, that's why you got to pull the microscope.
What's been kind of like your proudest moment? Is it been a business or a sale of a company? Almost like your baby, you know what I mean? What would that be?
Whenever you have something that goes from conceptual to reality, seeing that transition is really fun.
Yeah. It's the best
feeling ever. When I did the mob experience at the Tropicana, this was maybe 10, 12 years ago, right? It went from concept to drawing to construction to grand opening. And the grand opening, we had 4,000 people show up.
Wow.
And we had literally 2 billion impressions in the media around the world.
Oh, wow. That's intense. Wow.
The media picked it up as Mob Wars in Vegas because Oscar Goodman had his mob museum. I had the mob experience on the strip. Mm. So it got global coverage. And that opening day was just electric, you know, because you see something go from vision to reality.
That's exciting. Yeah.
That's my favorite part in business. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it is cool seeing an idea come to life. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a crazy feeling.
Especially doing it on a scale like that, I think, where you're impacting so many people's lives. I think that's the exciting part about it. The Mob Museum was dealt with hundreds of thousands of people probably visited there over the years. Millions, if not even. Yeah. It's,
I think we had 4,000 people on opening day.
Jeez. Yeah. That's exciting to be able to impact that many people's lives in a positive way.
That's awesome. Yeah. As far as business advice, right? We always ask a lot of our guests, you know, just business advice in general. What would you say to somebody that wants to get in business for themselves? Let's talk about just in Vegas in general, whether it's a small business or, you know, whatever it is that they're trying to do, what you said, you know, take it from vision.
In Vegas?
In Vegas, yeah. Let's say that they were a business owner and they wanted to become a small business owner and put their business out. What would you say to them?
I would say it depends on the industry they want to get in, because Vegas might not be the best place for them to start that business.
Okay.
There's a lot of pluses in Vegas. Yeah. I mean, you have a transient population of 42 million people a year. Mm-hmm. You have a big mining industry, a big gaming industry, a big
that's why it depends
hotel industry.
Yeah.
That's why it depends.
So Vegas has a very favorable tax climate.
It's a great place to form a company.
Very much so.
Right? Yeah. Vegas and Delaware are both great.
There's a lot of reason to do business in Vegas, but be passionate about what you're doing, because you're going to be spending your entire waking day doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
And if you don't like it, it's going to be miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you go into business for yourself, you don't punch out at 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. Right, you don't take the weekends off. Mm-hmm. You don't have a week or
breaks.
Two. You don't have a week or two of holidays. Right, you're still answering the phone in bed at night. Mm-hmm. Right, that doesn't. You're not on the clock.
Sometimes you don't sleep. Sometimes you gotta stay up for days.
Yeah. Yeah.
So know that going in, this is not a 9 to 5 Monday to Friday job.
Yeah.
Right.
A follow up question to that would be building a side hustle. Do you agree with maybe working your business or working your job and then trying to maybe build a side hustle that could maybe take over, you know, that job that you're currently working? Is that something that you would subscribe to?
Or? Yeah. When I worked at the bank, I started that companion animal program I worked at the bank.
Oh, that's so awesome. Okay.
While I was getting my MBA. So I was a full-time student, starting a business, working a full-time job.
Wow.
Yeah. No excuses.
Yeah. Literally no time at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was. How did you do it? Like that's a hell of an accomplishment. Yeah.
I had a lot more energy back
then. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if I could do it today, but you need to know what you're signing up for, because it's going to get tough. Mm-hmm. And it gets frustrating when you run into these roadblocks because you're already giving it everything you have, and then the roadblock comes up. Mm-hmm. The best advice I could give would be, when you come across a problem that seems insurmountable, deconstruct it into a bunch of different problems, right? Because a really complex problem that's overwhelming, you just give up and shut down. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it, you go, there's really 20 different problems here, you know, 20 different steps I have to take.
Yeah.
So you identify the 20 different steps, and then you triage them and say, these ones are the most time sensitive. Mm-hmm. And you take little problems one at a time. By the time you finish the 20th problem, that big insurmountable problem has been solved.
Yeah.
So it's really about deconstructing and triaging the different elements of a big complex problem.
I love that. Yeah. I remember when we sat down with Paolo Tuomini a couple of years back, he mentioned something similar, but a different perspective, like the pizza, you know, really just breaking down the problem as a pizza and really just getting in and breaking it up. It might be the pepperoni, the sausage, whatever it is, but you're breaking that problem down until you get down. You
there's know? An expression that like, it's how do you eat an elephant?
Yeah.
One bite at a time.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. That's true. Just transition a little bit. We always ask about a food in Vegas, right? Because we love the Vegas restaurants. Can you guys both give us one gem of a favorite restaurant you go to in Vegas or maybe something on the strip or off the strip?
You want to say it at the same time?
Yeah. Yeah.
SW
at the win. At the win.
SW's very, it's
and
very
you want
good.
To say number two at the same time?
Sure. The mansion at MGM. MGM.
Oh, okay.
So you guys both like the same spots all the time.
Those two are our two favorites.
I'm not going to lie to you. I personally like LA a lot more than Vegas for a variety of reasons.
Okay. Yeah.
The food out there is a lot better. When I'm in Vegas, I just mostly eat fast food or, you know, I'll go to the store, I'll cook something, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like Mr. Chow's at Caesars.
That's Mr. Chow's is good. That's a big chain restaurant. You know, SW is definitely the best.
I like SW. I've been there multiple times. Mm-hmm. It's very good. Yeah.
Management there has gotten a little strange.
Okay.
But it's still really, it's the best food in Vegas for sure, SW. And then the mansions at MGM, which is
more expensive. I've never been there.
Yeah, I've never been there. Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. It doesn't even pop
nobody said
map.
That one time heard of it. On our show.
There's only 33 villas. MGM spent $200 million building this like secret building behind it. It's got like a big gate courtyard entrance and they can literally make anything in that restaurant. It doesn't matter what type of food you want.
You said it's called the Mansions? Is it like
MGM Mansions? Mansions.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I
didn't most know they people had have most MGM employees haven't heard of it.
It's an invitation only type of thing for the high rollers. Fancy.
They comp out 90% of the rooms just to high rollers.
Oh wow!
But if you want to pay for them, it's like $25,000 a night usually starting.
Okay,
we'll take you guys if you want. MGM Mansions is cool.
Don't tell. We'll sign up for that 100%. You have to tell us when. Yeah, date on there. That's awesome. Nobody's mentioned that. I don't think anybody else mentioned. Somebody might have mentioned SW, but
I heard STK. I think SW is
good. STK is everywhere. STK is in LA, Miami.
SW is different.
No, I love STK, but
show is beautiful.
Yeah, and the steak is so much better.
And the nice thing is, it's we've been multiple times. It's like an open feel. So you literally, you have the show. So it's literally, they open the whole wall up. So you feel like you're outside and indoor. And
we talked to the manager the other couple weeks ago. And he said between Sean and I, we've been there like over 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah, we've been there over 1,000 times. In the last few years.
We were there on opening day. They treat us really well there.
Awesome. Well, shout out to them, man. That's good stuff. What else are you guys working on? I know some of the things you guys can't talk about, but what else are you, let's just talk about 2023. What else are you guys focus on for this year?
We're doing a large development project in Vegas.
Okay. We're building a 4,200 unit apartment complex.
Oh, nice.
Awesome.
It might be one of the biggest, it's the biggest affordable housing project in the country, I think, that we're working on right now.
Okay. Awesome.
And Vegas needs that right now. Yeah, with the rental prices skyrocketing.
There's a bad low, there's a bad shortage in Vegas for housing. Right now, so this is going to help a lot of people.
You know, did you say 4,200 units?
4,200 units.
We probably have about 12,000 residents. So you talk about impacting people's lives, right?
Yeah, this is a project that's going to help. Mob Experience was a for fun thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is going to help a lot of people. This.
But the housing, yeah. When do you guys think you'll break ground on that? And when will that actually happen for you guys?
First quarter of next year?
Well, no, we'll probably break ground end of next year or beginning of 2025.
Okay.
You don't think we're going to start in the beginning of next year?
To break ground? No.
Break ground. Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
but actually be able to start, you're thinking the end of 2024 or beginning of 2025. Awesome.
Yeah, we'll probably have a groundbreaking.
Awesome. I mean, we're excited for that. Definitely needs it in the market.
It's going to be a good one.
Yeah. Nevada needs 85,000 affordable housing units, and we only have a couple of hundred housing starts for affordable housing. So, you know, there's a lot of people who need a lot of help. And when the economy breaks, it's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. I think the economy is going to break. Yeah. When it does, it's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. You know, we have rents doubled in the last 2 or 3 years.
For sure.
Right. So we have a housing boom and people are getting priced out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So if you spend more than 30% of your gross income on housing, you're low income housing. And because the housing prices have gone up so much, that percentage of your average gross income has gone up above that 30% for a lot of people.
Yeah,
it has. They're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all those new developments that you're seeing pop up everywhere, A++ developments with $2,500 or $3,000 a month rents, and that's not just attainable for the majority of the people who live here.
A lot of people have been affected by this.
Yes, it's been tough.
Nationally, the country needs 7 million affordable housing units.
Wow.
Nationally.
Right. 85,000 here in Nevada.
Wow. That tells you the demand. Yeah, that's unreal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unreal. Well, I can't wait for you guys to put that together. Man, I applaud you guys for being able to do that, stepping up and doing that. Anything else you guys want to share that we forgot to ask you guys that you want to leave us out on?
You know, all right, I'll leave you with this.
Okay.
I was asked to speak at the World Economic Forum in Davos, and they asked me, what's the definition of success?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's not what you think it is. Most people think it's a lot of money. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people that have money that are miserable. And I know a lot of people that don't have money that are the happiest people on the planet,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's about finding that balance where you wake up in the morning excited and you're happy. And I thought about it for a while, a long time ago, and I decided there are really three things that go into it, right? It's money, time, and health. And if you look at that, when you're young, you have time and you have health, but no money. When you're working, you have money and health, but no time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're older, you have money and time, but your health starts to fail,
mm-hmm.
right? So I decided a long time ago, the trick was getting all three things at once,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll find happiness. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I set my focus.
Yeah.
That's a powerful statement. That's a good one. That's 100% right. That's awesome. I'm glad you ended us out on that. Yeah, Sean, that anything else you want to leave us on, man? That was powerful, Jay, for sure.
Yeah, pretty much. That's your common quote.
Shots fired, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I
know. It's good.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's another thing that Sean showed me, actually. There was a guy giving a lecture to a group of people, and he said, if I offered you $10 million, who would take it? And every hand in the room goes up. He says, what if I told you you're not going to wake up tomorrow? And every hand goes down. He said, so what you're telling me is tomorrow's worth more than $10 million to you.
Oh, dang. That's a pretty good one, too.
Yeah. Right. Found that one on Facebook.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's true.
That is true. You're right. Every person would not accept it. I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't at all.
The only thing I would close out on is honestly, if we're dropping quotes here, I would just say, just, you know, live your life to the fullest. Yeah. Don't be afraid to do stuff.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to take risks. Just start a business. Get into it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't be afraid. Learn from people. Listen to people that have already made it. Don't be arrogant and think you know more than those people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Listen to them. And awesome. Live your life to the fullest. Live every day like it's your last.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, appreciate you guys, man. Thanks for taking the time, man, to do this with us, man. We appreciate it in making this happen. You can check us out at thevegascircle.com. So appreciate you guys' time, man. Thanks
cool. Yeah. No, 100%. Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you. Great to meet you.
Yeah, that was good.